the other end of the maze. Between them was a series of shifting corridors made of crashing metal blocks the size of Riel's body, spears that thrust out at random, stairs that twisted and transformed without pause, paths that twirled on their axes like roasting spits over a fire. Too many moving parts to keep track of. Watching them, she felt utterly dwarfed. The thought of saying her prayers, steadying her breath, felt ludicrous, inadequate. She'd be crushed. She lacked the control to slip through such a cruelly designed maze. If only she had more time to think. She squinted through the wild glinting chaos, her hands shaking. "Don't risk it," came Corian's voice, tense now and unamused. "You are powerful, but you're not immortal."
"I could be," Riel responded.
And that shocked her, made her straighten and blink in surprise. She hadn't meant to say such a thing. The very idea was preposterous. And yet the words had surged up through her body, automatic and instinctive.
"Yes," Corian answered pensively. "You could be, I think."
Riel shook herself, silencing him. That was a conversation for later. She wasn't, after all, immortal today. The platform beneath her shifted. She took a deep breath, dashed forward just as the platform jerked and gave way. She looked back, frantic.
"Eyes front, Riel!"
Corian's voice made Riel whirl just in time. A gigantic metal pendulum swung her way. She flung out her arm. Gears shrieked. A thud sounded as of a hammer hitting an anvil. The pendulum, now warped and dented, ground to a stop. Riel raced on, dodging spears that whistled fast toward her. The path ahead shifted, tossing her off her feet and down a narrow tunnel made of mesh. She landed in a heap, bit down hard on her tongue. Tasting blood, dizzy, she peered through the mesh of the tunnel. It was one of many, a rotating knot of tunnel-shaped cages, long and thin. She crawled, seeking an exit, as the knot of tunnels spun ever faster. They knotted and unknotted like a mass of wriggling snakes. A patch of mesh ahead of her peeled open, creating an exit. She scrambled for it, but wasn't fast enough. The mesh sewed itself shut in the space of a blink. She screamed in rage, nearly slammed her hands against it, stopped herself.
"Think, Riel. If you shatter this trap, you'll fall. And to where?"
Eyes shut, struggling to force her mind clear, she found the path she needed. She saw the maze arrange itself orderly, so that the writhing nest of tunnels trapping her would unfurl and grow still. She saw a path leading out of her tunnel and down to a set of sturdy stairs that would lead her to the second caged child. The image unfurled in her mind's eye like a map, golden-edged and glimmering, and when she opened her eyes once more, a sea of minuscule brilliant grains winked beneath the shifting veil of the physical world. Then, the world remade itself as she instructed. Power shot out from her fingers to slither down the mesh of her cage. She felt its progress as a slithering heat under her skin, felt the rough metal beneath the reaching tendrils of her power as if her own hands were touching it. Her eyes drifted shut with pleasure, the knots in her body loosened, then vanished. A shuddering liquid heat cascaded down her limbs, pooled in her belly, shivered down her thighs. The maze around her shifted, groaning as if in protest. The metal masters above were fighting for control. She smiled, sated.
"Nice try."
Just as Riel had envisioned, the tunnel that trapped her unfolded. Docile. Its opening came to rest on a wide platform leading to a set of stairs. She crawled out, stood for a moment to catch her breath. She felt shot full of energy, as if awakening from the best sleep of her life. She turned her gaze up to the crowd, to the two mountain peaks above that, to the sun beyond. She bowed low, with an indolent flourish of her hands. The crowd exploded into cheers, so loud that even from the depth of the pit, Riel's ears rang from the noise. Grinning, she bounded up the stairs to the second child's cage. This one was a girl, pale and thin-limbed, her eyes large and dark in her hollow-cheeked face. Peeking out from under a mop of tangled brown hair, she sobbed uncontrollably. Riel touched her hand to the cage's lock, felt the euphoric power from a few moments before seep into the metal, like a drug. With a quiet sizzle, the lock collapsed, melted, and dripped silver to the stairs. Riel gazed down at the girl, her eyes heavy-lidded.
"It's all right," she said, breathless. "I'm here to save you."
The girl gaped up at her.
"Are you the Sun Queen, my lady?"
Riel held out a hand to her.
"I will be. Soon."
The girl jumped up from her hiding spot and barreled into Riel's open arms. But then, with a great heaving groan, the entire cage rocked beneath them. Riel swayed, tightened her grip on the child. A ripple of horrified shouts sounded from the crowd above.
"My lady,"
whispered the child. She raised a shaking hand to point into the maze below them.
"It's falling down!"
She was right. Riel stared, her terror climbing fast as the cage began to move, from the far bottom corner and the near top corner. Swiftly it collapsed, folding in on itself. The horrible grinding racket sounded like all the axes in the world clashing against one another. And the third child still stood trapped far below. Above, the creak of a door. Riel shoved the girl toward it without thinking.
"Climb!"
The child clung to her.
"You'll die! Come with me, please!"
Riel caught the child's face in one hand. "Do you really think that I, the Sun Queen, will let such a puny cage be the end of me?" With a tremulous smile, the girl shook her head. Riel returned her smile and pushed her up a long, skinny ladder to the waiting metal masters. Once they had the child in hand, the floor beneath Riel gave way. The fall choked away her scream. She dropped 50 feet and slammed onto one of several rotating poles. They spun out from a center mechanism like spokes of a carriage wheel. She clung to the pole that had broken her fall. She could hardly breathe. Her stomach felt bruised from the impact. But suddenly, even through her exhaustion, Riel had an idea. She closed her eyes.
"I can do this,"
Corian answered firmly.
"You can."
She let go of the pole, dropping onto a metal plate that had been whizzing through the air only seconds before. At the slam of Riel's boots, the plate stopped, frozen in mid-air. She threw up her hands, felt the simmering hot energy flowing between her and those spinning poles, and made them fly. They spun out in all directions, so fast any one of them could have cut a man clean in half. Riel twisted her wrists sharply in the air. The poles slammed to a stop, wedging themselves into the four corners of the cage. The cage shuddered. Its collapse halted. Every piece of metal trembled in place, creaking awfully. That wouldn't hold for long. Riel raced through the air, summoning metal plates from the walls as she ran. They flew to her from the floor, the staircases, the labyrinthine paths crisscrossing the cube. She flung each plate before her, stepped lightly on it, pushed off, and moved on. Corian let out an admiring laugh.
"Marvelous, Riel. Stunning."
Pride bloomed in Riel's chest. With each step on her floating metal path, she felt power gather at her feet. When she landed next to the third child's cage, it blew apart at her touch, leaving the child standing, shivering, in its ruins.
"Come here."
Riel shook her hand impatiently. Every inch of her skin tingled. Distantly, she felt the screaming ache of her muscles.
It's almost over.
How did you do that?
The child asked, gaping.
You were flying.
A series of colossal, metallic crashes exploded around them. Riel looked up to see the poles wedged in their corners giving way. But the cage did not continue its collapse. Instead, it lifted itself into the air, the metal groaning. Riel grabbed the child, watched the cage's shifting base for an opening, then jumped through it to the ground. She and the child fell hard. The child screamed, clutching his foot. Above them hovered the cage, slowly spinning. Then it rearranged itself, the metal maze breaking apart, re-forming, sharpening. A storm of blades, 10,000 strong, turned as one and raced toward the lonely spot in the dirt where Riel and the child crouched. Riel stared, panic drumming its way up her throat. Time slowed and quickened, both at once. She could faintly hear Corian shouting at her to do something, to defend herself, to move. But thousands of swords? That was too many. Manipulating a few pieces of the maze was one thing, but this? They darkened the sky. They whistled and roared. They would cut her to pieces, and the child, too. The child grasped her wrist.
May the Queen's light guide us home, he whispered to her, the smile on his face not one of resignation, but of belief.
The Sun Queen's prayer. The Sun Queen's light. Her light. Her power.
Yes, Corian whispered. Yes, Riel.
Riel pulled the child close, then turned to the swords, closed her eyes, and flung up her arms.
No,
she refused this fate. No, she had trials to complete, friends waiting for her, the mystery of a foreign princess's murder to solve. No, she had words of love still to speak, and a voice in her head, and a hunger, a craving to answer the awakening call of her blood. No, not yet. She waited in silence, her body trembling, power stretched out from her fingers, from the sharp turns of her shoulders, from the ends of her hair. Had it been enough? She drew a few shallow breaths in the ringing silence, then dared to open her eyes. A blade hovered before her face. Two more, pointing at each of her eyes. Hundreds. Thousands, all held in place by her silent command. They filled the pit, quivering, denied their kill. The air hummed metallic. Riel let out an incredulous, tearful breath. Then she let her arms fall. The swords dropped flat to the ground, forming a perfect circle around the spot of earth where Riel knelt with the child. Their fall shook the ground, their blades pointed away from her. She sat at the center of a scorched metal sun. Slowly the world returned to her. She blinked, wiped her eyes clean. A growing surge of voices made her look up. The people of Seldaria were on their feet. They were screaming her name. A chant. A prayer.
Riel! Riel! Riel!
She raised her face to the sky and showed them her smile. Chapter 24. Eliana. Something is wrong with Lord Arkelian. He took me into his bed, ordered me to hurt him as he lay naked before me. I did so happily, but his wounds closed almost at once. He roared and writhed and wept. He is ill, perhaps mad. I believe all the Emperor's men to be mad, every single one. Encoded message
written by Princess Nirvana Amarouk of Astavar, delivered to the Red Crown underground. Eliana scrambled upright, gasping, her clothes clinging to her sweat-drenched skin. She had been lying face down on a mud-crusted blanket. Her hand slipped as she struggled to push herself to a sitting position.
Remy,
she looked wildly about, saw only a black forest lit by a wedge of moon.
Remy!
Hush. A gentle hand smoothed the hair back from her forehead.
He's safe. And so are you.
Eliana recognized the voice.
Navi?
The girl smiled down at her, her gaze worried but kind. I'm here. You're all right. Dark clouds shifted meanly across Eliana's vision. She gripped Navi's hand.
Tell me.
We're 3 days' ride from Rinthos. You've been drifting in and out for hours. A fever, Simon thinks. Him, Remy, you and me. We're all alive and safe. Hob is with us as well.
Hob.
Memories of the Empire outpost came rushing back to her. Smoke drifting up from the ground, running toward the waiting lines of Adatrox, two whining bombardiers in her hands. Only then did Eliana register the searing pain on her back. She winced, and Navi hissed in sympathy.
Simon and I did the best we could, Navi said, but the blast caught the entire back of your body. Please, lie down on your stomach.
Eliana obeyed, her vision tilting. The wounds must indeed have been terrible. She'd never suffered from such severe pain hours after an injury.
The compound, she bit out. Did they survive? Patrick and...
She could not make herself say Lynette's name. Navi sat beside her.
I believe most of the refugees got away.
Yes. Patrick stayed to help evacuate them to a new site. Hob has come with us, to meet a contact in Rinthos, who can help with supplies for the survivors. The smoke ruined much of their food, but Eliana, you saved them. What Adatrox you didn't destroy, Simon picked off easily.
What you did.
I've never seen anything like that. Eliana lay very still, her cheek pressed to the blanket. Her vision was beginning to settle in the darkness. Remy lay nearby, curled up at the base of a tree. Even as he slept, his brow creased with worry. Beside him sat Simon, arms crossed over his chest, eyes closed. In sleep, he looked almost peaceful. The silver ribbons of his scars shivered like ghosts in the shifting moonlight. Then Eliana heard footsteps in the woods, and tensed.
It's only Hob, Navi whispered. He's on watch.
Please, try to rest.
That's unlikely. Where are my knives?
Then she remembered Lord Mowbray confiscating them and groaned.
They're gone, aren't they?
Actually, Simon retrieved them from the outpost. Now Remy has them. He won't let any of us touch them. Eliana let out a tired, relieved laugh.
And now? We go to Rinthos.
Yes. There, we'll be able to find better medicine for your back than what Hob helped us scrape together. She paused. I'm sorry to say I think you'll be scarred permanently from it. But you will live. Eliana closed her eyes. Exhausted tears slid down her cheeks.
Oh, Eliana.
Navi cupped her face with one soft hand.
How can I help you?
I feel useless.
You can't help me. Just leave me be. Please.
For a time, Navi was blessedly quiet. But even in the silence, broken only by the whisper of wind and Hob's occasional steady tread, Eliana could not find her way back to sleep. She opened her eyes, knowing that she must say something, or this dead, black feeling in her chest would rise up and engulf her.
Navi?
Yes?
I don't know. I can't sleep.
Shall I tell you a story?
There was a smile in Narvi's voice.
You saw things in Lord Arkelian's palace, didn't you?
A new stillness fell over them. Narvi's voice was careful.
What kind of things?
Impossible things. Men with slit throats, somehow walking again. Men with black eyes, speaking from across a vast ocean.
Did you ever see odd behavior from Lord Arkelian?
Eliana asked.
Or from visiting generals?
I'm not sure I know what you mean by odd behavior. But the slightly stilted quality of Narvi's voice told Eliana that, in fact, she did know.
Lord Mowbray, I slit his throat, yet there he was, minutes later, walking once more. His neck was whole. No wound.
Here, Narvi offered. Water.
Eliana allowed Narvi to help her take a few greedy sips from Simon's canteen, then lay back down with a moan.
And before that, she added, I was in his lap. I was prepared to pleasure him in exchange for amnesty. I meant to kiss him, and then...
Eliana's voice had grown so quiet Narvi had to bend low to hear.
And then, she prompted.
I saw a vision, Eliana said. His eyes locked with mine and I was taken elsewhere. I was both at the outpost and also across the ocean. I was in Saldaria, in a beautiful city, larger than any I've seen. In Elysium.
Narvi's eyes were wide with astonishment.
The Emperor's city? He spoke to me.
Not the Emperor.
Eliana nodded once. The pain firing up her legs, back and skull was so violent it nearly made her sick over Narvi's boots.
Those prisoners,
Eliana whispered, squeezing her eyes shut. She was losing her grip on the conversation. Her questions scattered and faded.
At the outpost. They were kept in cages. The fire. They couldn't get out. I heard them screaming.
Hush now. Narvi's hand pressed hers gently.
Think of Crown's Hollow. You saved many lives there. I'm a murderer, Narvi. Tell me I'm not.
Narvi did not reply.
Ah,
Eliana murmured.
A telling silence. All I will say, said Narvi, is that you have done the best you could with what was given to you.
How disappointing. I'd hoped you wouldn't lie to me. Eliana stared bleakly out into the night. Her cheeks were on fire. She pressed them into the cool mud.
You recognized me, you know.
Narvi leaned closer.
What? Say that again? He recognized me. The Emperor.
Just before Eliana's eyes drifted shut, she saw Simon's own eyes open to watch her.
He saw my face, and he asked me where I was,
she mumbled.
Eliana,
came Simon's voice, near now, and gentler than she'd ever heard it. Almost asleep, she turned to face it, like turning her face up to the sun.
Simon,
she smiled, fuzzy-headed.
There you are.
Eliana, say that again. What you told Narvi.
I saw the Emperor. He reached for me. He asked where I was.
And did you tell him?
One of Simon's hands cupped her cheek, the other gingerly, the bandaged back of her head.
Eliana, listen to me. This is very important. Did you tell him?
No.
Her eyes fluttered shut. I told him nothing.
Good. Simon helped her settle with her head in his lap. His thumb caressed her forehead. That's very good. You're all right now. You're all right. Sleep. Eliana dreamed of death, as she so often did. She dreamed of everyone's death, but her own. She reigned, a corona of light blazing around her head, over a world of scorched earth. Chapter 25. Rial. I believe us to be lost. How can we fight creatures whose lives stretch before them like infinite roads, who can sift through minds as easily as a child crafts castles on the shore? We have made a mistake, engaging the angels. All our power pales in comparison to that of their ageless minds. Surviving Journals of St. Grimwald of Borsval. September 25th, year 1547, of the First Age. 2 nights after the metal trial, Rial lay in bed, pretending to be asleep for the sake of Eveline, who stood placidly at the door to her rooms. But her mind raced, and her blood thrummed hot with nerves. Well, she swallowed hard. She could not delay this moment any longer. Are you there, Corian? It's time for us to talk. Of course I'm here, Rial, came his voice at once. I always am. She frowned into her pillow. I don't find that particularly comforting. You should. Unlike your other friends, I have no desire to see you killed.
So we're friends, then? You and I?
His response came like a sigh across her skin. I very much hope so. She drew her blanket tighter around her body.
How can I be friends with someone I've never met? Someone I'm not even sure is real. A delicate sensation slid down her spine, like the brush of a gentle finger, then faded near the dip of her lower back.
Don't I feel real? Came the response.
Rial shivered. Are you a spirit? A ghost?
No.
Then why is it that I can feel you and hear you, but I cannot see you?
It is my own special way of talking to you from afar, my dear.
There was a shifting in Rial's mind, of both sound and sensation, as though Corian were settling himself comfortably beside her.
I can send you my thoughts, and you can send me yours. I can send you how I feel, and I can sense your feelings in return.
He paused. Then, with a tiny smile curling his voice, almost shyly,
I can send you the feeling of how I would like to touch you. And you can do the same back to me, if you wish.
A war was taking place inside Rial's body, between cold fear and the desire to say at once, touch me then. And if I don't wish for you to touch me, she managed to think.
Then I won't. I have been too forward. Forgive me.
Just don't do it again. She paused, her cheeks flaming. Unless I ask you to.
Of course.
He sounded quietly pleased.
So you wanted to talk to me. You have questions, I think.
Many.
That is understandable.
Another shift. She had the sense of him sitting on the edge of a divan, leaning forward with his elbows on his knees. But his face was a blur. First, she began. What do you look like?
I can show you if you'd like. You're already partway there.
Rial's heart beat faster.
You are sitting on a divan, then. I can see the faint shape of you.
Indeed. Concentrate on the lines of my body. Try to make them sharper, as if tracing me with a pen.
She obeyed. Slowly the blurred figure came into focus. A slender, tall, pale man with fine black hair and shining waves that curled softly at his ears. Fine cheekbones, as if chiseled from white marble. Large eyes of a bright, pale blue. Full lips that stretched into a fond smile when her eyes met his.
"Hello, Riel,"
he said, and his voice was no longer simply in her mind. He was there. He was speaking to her. She gasped, blinked, and her concentration broke. Corian disappeared. She was suddenly, terribly alone in her bed, in the dark quiet of her rooms. She struggled to catch her breath, her mouth dry.
"Where did you go?"
"I'm still here," he replied.
"I lost you, I..."
She swallowed. Her skin felt cold and clammy now that she no longer stood near him.
"It's difficult right now for us to communicate as completely as we could. In time, we'll manage it. It requires practice. And..."
Here his voice darkened slightly.
"You have so very many things demanding your attention right now."
"The trials?"
"Yes. Among others."
There was a tense silence, and then he whispered,
"Riel, may I touch you?"
She drew in a tight breath.
"Nothing untoward. I swear it."
Riel watched the star-spotted night sky beyond her windows.
"First, tell me, what are you?"
"What am I?"
He sounded playfully put out. "Dearest, you insult me.
I am altogether a person, you know, with an identity and a name."
"But you aren't human. Humans can't talk like this, using only their minds. The night before the metal trial, you showed me a memory. One of my own memories. One I'd forgotten."
"Yes, I did."
"Corian, that's extraordinary."
"I suppose it is. To you."
"Humans can't do such things."
"That is true."
She waited for him to say more, and when he didn't, she realized he was waiting for her to say what she already knew, what she'd known with increasing certainty for weeks now.
"You're an angel."
His response, when it came at last, was toneless.
"I am."
Riel climbed out of bed, tossing the linens aside. Only when standing did she realize that her nightgown clung to her body, damp with sweat.
"My lady?"
inquired Eveline from the door.
"Is everything all right?"
"Of course." Riel could hardly hear herself over the thrum of fear in her veins.
"I only need a glass of water."
Somehow she made it into her bathing room and shut the door behind her. She stumbled to the wash basin, splashed water on her face, then poured herself a glass and let it sit untouched. She leaned heavily against her vanity's marble countertop, struggling to steady herself. She felt light-headed, detached from her limbs.
"Riel, please, sit down."
Corin's voice was gentle.
"You'll fall and hit your head."
"I wish to stand," she snapped.
"Very well. Is there anything I can do to help?"
"You're lying to me," she managed at last.
"You know I'm not."
"All the angels are gone. They're in the deep. The saints banished them there, locked them beyond the gate."
"No gate stands forever,"
Corian interrupted. Riel stalked across the room to stand before the enormous gilded mirror that stood propped up against the far wall. She looked rumpled and terrified, her green eyes bright and wide, her dark hair falling loose from her braid,
her nightgown dwarfing her in the grand, tiled room. Just think what sort of rooms they'll give you, once they've made you their beloved Sun Queen, Corian remarked, his voice edged. A staggering thought. Isn't it? Stop talking to me. You don't mean that. Riel began to pace. I think I know my own mind. And I know your mind, too. Such a spectacular thing it is. Get out! She stopped mid-stride, fists clenched at her sides. Right this moment, get out of my head and leave me be. They will use you, Riel, he said at last, urgently now. They will lift you higher and higher, dress you in jewels and crowns, and when they realize who you really are, what lives inside you, they will spurn you, and you will be left alone. Get out! She screamed, and when he obeyed, she felt his departure like a thread being tugged out of an infinite canvas, until finally snapping free. The sensation left her feeling unmade. She sat down hard on the edge of her bathing tub. Eveline barged into the room, sword raised. My lady, are you hurt?
No. Riel wiped her eyes with a shaken hand. Eveline, I think I've had a terrible nightmare. I don't feel quite myself.
Eveline sheathed her sword and hurried forward. Here, my lady. I'll help you back to bed and send for some tea. And a cinnamon cake, perhaps. Riel leaned heavily into Eveline's broad body.
Perhaps three cakes would do the trick. Three cakes are, generally speaking, much more effective than one, my lady.
Riel's smile was faint and brought prickling tears to her eyes.
Bless you, Eveline. I've taught you well.
Eveline helped Riel settle back into bed.
I'll return shortly, my lady. I'll send in Dashiell to watch over you.
Riel nodded and wrapped herself back into her blankets.
The angels are all gone,
Riel told herself, shivering in her bed and staring at the ceiling. If she thought it enough times, perhaps she could make it a real truth, just as she had remade the world of the metal cage into one she could control. She squeezed her eyes shut and tried not to think about the sweet, lonely ache that lingered against her skin, where Corian's touch had once been.
The angels are all gone. The angels are all gone.
But the prayer did not help. Riel couldn't sleep the rest of the night, which left her unfocused and sloppy the next day as her father drove her ruthlessly through her conditioning exercises. And even when she settled into bed the night after, her muscles aching, sleep eluded her. Corian, apparently, had taken her request quite seriously. She could neither hear nor sense him. Her mind felt hollow, as a cave. Part of her was glad. But the part of her that lay restlessly in her too large bed, unsettled and on edge, yearned for company. And when she thought of his final words to her, "They will spurn you, and you will be left alone," the hollow of her mind expanded into her heart until all she could feel was a desperate, endless sadness.
"I don't want to be alone," she whispered against her pillow.
She held her breath, waiting. Would Corian answer her? Send her some sort of reassurance. 5 breaths. 10. He said nothing. She flung aside her linens, yanked the heavy plum and gold dressing gown from her bedside chair, and marched toward the door to her rooms. Eveline snapped to attention.
Are we going somewhere, my lady? Indeed we are, Eveline. I need some fresh air.
She considered going straight to Tal and confessing everything to him. Corian, the angels, the frustrations blazing hot paths through her body. But instead, Riel slipped into the darkened castle, seeking solace, craving company, and recklessly, secretly hoping at each turn of Baneguard's moon-painted corridors that she would see Corian standing there, with an apology on his lips and a sly kiss for her own. Chapter 26. Eliana. It is widely believed that the creation of the gate, which ended the angelic wars, began the end of magic as it once was. If the gate was the beginning of the end, then the fall of the Blood Queen was the true ending. With her death, the Blood Queen stamped out every remaining spark of ancient power, leaving the world ravaged and dim. Forward to a collection of Venteran children's tales, entitled Stories of a Forgotten Age.
Can you walk?
Gingerly, Eliana stood and gave Simon a tight nod. She hoped she was pretending the right amount of pain. Remy squeezed her hand, and she glanced down at him with a smile she tried to make reassuring. He, of course, would know the truth by the look on her face. If they hadn't healed completely, her wounds from the bombardier blast were now well enough that Eliana could feel no pain, save a dull soreness in her muscles. Over the last few hours of sleep, it seemed her wounds had closed. Her flesh had repaired itself. And, Eliana knew, the next time Na'vi or Simon insisted on changing her bandages, she would have to lie. Or flee. Or be found out. But found out for what? Was she one of them? Whatever Lord Mowbray was, whatever strangeness gave him his liquid black eyes, the gaunt hunger of his cheeks, the ability to repair a slit throat and walk away whole, was Eliana also such a creature? A wave of disgust swelled in her throat.
I don't have black eyes. I have eaten, and I have had lovers. My hunger was sated, and the loving felt good, and always has. But my body was covered with burns, and now it is not.
She had always known that her body's ability to heal itself faster and more thoroughly than anyone else's was unusual, to say the least, impossible and unthinkable. She had, however, always explained it away when she lay awake at night, endlessly worrying, or when she had first confessed to Remy by cutting open her arm in front of him, only for it to sew itself healed a moment later. His horrified eyes had lit up with wonder.
"El," he had whispered. "That's some kind of magic."
"Ridiculous," she'd replied, her heart pounding but her voice cool.
"Magic does not exist." "But it did once. Maybe some of it survived Queen Riel's fall,"
Eliana had snorted.
"Doubtful. That bitch was a lot of things, but she wasn't sloppy. She won't have left us any magic, not even a scrap." "So, how do you explain it, then?"
She had shrugged, grinning.
"I won't argue with my body being a wonder. Harkon could tell you that much."
Remy had clapped his hands over his ears.
"Please spare me. I suppose I'm just more resilient than most."
She hadn't really believed that inane explanation, even then. But what choice did she have? Any other possibility would be too much to consider. Preposterous at best, and dangerous at worst. And she had given up her hope for miracles years ago.
"Anyway," she had continued, "I hope you won't tell anyone. Not even Mother. Because if anyone found out, they'd use you as a weapon, even more than the Empire already does."
"Right," she said stiffly after a pause.
"Exactly."
He had nodded.
"I'm still going to believe it's magic, though. I have to. Whatever lies you have to tell yourself, Remy, are no business of mine."
But now that Eliana had seen Lord Mowbray The knowledge of what her body could do, the question of what that meant, sat noxiously inside her.
Am I one of them? She thought, reaching back to scratch her shoulder. Or will I become one of them?
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Hob staring at her, and remembered to wince as she moved.
Quickly and quietly, Simon muttered, slip into the crowd along with everyone else. Stay close.
Together, their ragged group of five slowly moved onto the broad, crowded road that led to the city of Rinthos. It was a path congested with travelers, refugees seeking shelter from the wild lands beyond, small clusters of magicians fiddling bawdy traveling songs and singing laments for the dead. A few merchants shilling wares, clothes, medicines, drugs, idols of the emperor carved out of wood and small enough to wear around one's neck. Eliana kept her gait stiff, uneven, and her eyes focused straight ahead on the city gates. Adatrox drifted throughout the crowd and patrolled the perimeter wall, but they did not stop anyone from passing through the city gates. Not even the Empire, it seemed, wanted to do the work of clearing out the massive, clogged sprawl that was Rinthos. It was the perfect place to hide. It was also quite possibly a disastrous place to hide. Surely the Empire knew of what had happened at the outpost, had heard of the girl blowing apart an entire regiment of Adatrox and, perhaps, surviving. And Adatrox could have seen Simon retrieve her body from the wreckage, flee on horseback with her. Maybe this Adatrox had sent a message to Lord Mowbray. Maybe the general's ashes, blown apart when the outpost detonated, had coalesced back into a solid frame. Maybe he was, at this very moment, stalking their trail. Eliana counted her breaths until her thoughts stopped spinning. They had no choice. They had to stop in Rinthos. Hob needed to meet his contact, who would help resupply Patrick, his soldiers, and the now homeless refugees. And Eliana, as far as they knew, desperately needed medicine. As they passed through the outer wall of Rinthos, Eliana glanced up at the overcrowded city towering above her and licked her cracked lips out of sheer uneasiness. An interweaving network of stone paths, wooden bridges, and twisting staircases stretched high above him, connecting apartment to apartment and high road to low road. Not far from the city was a sea of bones, which churned between Venterra and the occupied kingdom of Meridian. A thin film of sand coated the crumbling roads, and whenever they passed one of the canals that snaked through the city, the pungent smell of fish and waste was enough to turn Eliana's already restless stomach. They had been navigating the choked streets of Rinthos for an hour when they finally found Sanctuary's entrance, an unremarkable door at first glance, coated in peeling grey paint and bolted with a broken lock. But past the door, down a narrow staircase, they emerged into a small, damp room manned by three masked guards. Each towered two heads above even Simon. The lead guard stopped Simon with a curved blade at his throat. Simon lowered his hood, then uttered something in a lyrical language Eliana didn't recognize. Not traditional Venteran, and not the plain common tongue. Beside her, Remy sucked in a breath. Whatever Simon had said must have been the right thing to say. The guards moved aside. One of them unlatched the heavy metal door on the far wall. Simon inclined his head, then led the way into the dark, low-ceilinged rooms beyond. Sanctuary. The smell of the city's infamous gambling pits slapped Eliana like a fetid hand. Cooking meat, pipe smoke, scented oils, ale and wine, sweat-stained bodies, the tang of blood. What language was that?
Eliana whispered to Remy as they followed Simon inside.
Old Saldarian,
Remy whispered back, his fingers tight around her own. A chill went down Eliana's back.
The language of the Blood Queen.
And of the Lightbringer, Navi added. Eliana glanced at her, resisting the urge to touch the necklace beneath her shirt. Sanctuary was a cramped and raucous city within a city. 5 circular levels, lit by gas lamps at every column support, looked down upon a floor packed with people. They gathered at tables, hands full of cards, or around pits where vicious dogs tore at each other. Men in ragged trousers beat their opponents to a pulp in square wire cages, while onlookers shouted out their wagers and thrust fistfuls of money into the air. And above, on each of the mezzanines looking down over the fighting pits, the shadows teemed with shapes, couples whispering over their drinks, scantily clad dancers writhing on tabletops. Card players, masked in clouds of smoke, gathered on cushions surrounding low tables. One man, so corpulent Eliana could not see his eyes within the folds of his skin, shouted out with wet, choking laughter as 2 men wrestled at his feet. On the 3rd level, a woman so pale that both her skin and hair glowed white in the candlelit gloom, held court in a private curtained parlor. A beautiful young man, wearing hardly enough to cover himself, lounged beside her, muscles shimmering with powder. They passed the couple and disappeared into a dark, narrow corridor flanked by 2 hooded figures, their faces hidden. Eliana's fingers itched to grab Erebeth. A curtain dropped closed behind them, plunging them into silence. Their footsteps disappeared in the corridor's plush carpet. Tiny gas lamps softly lit the way.
A charming place,
Navi observed mildly. A smirk twitched at Eliana's mouth.
Perhaps we should enter Simon into one of those fights downstairs. Win ourselves some coin for your refugees, Hob.
Simon stopped at a door in the wall.
Only if you are my opponent, Dread. We could recreate our first meeting for everyone.
The one when I would have beaten you, had you not pulled a gun on me?
The one when I knocked you soundly on your arse?
Then he rapped once on the door. A metal slat in the wood snapped open, and Simon uttered another sentence in Old Saldarian. At once, the door opened to a quiet chamber lined with silent, robed figures. A muscled, middle-aged woman with amber-brown skin rushed out from a side door, straight for Hob.
"Thank God you're alive!" She hugged him fiercely, clapped a hand on his back. "We heard about the attack on—"
The woman had seen Navi, and after a moment of frozen shock, she sank to her knees.
"Your Highness," she whispered. "Forgive me, I knew you would be here, and yet, seeing you in the flesh—"
She looked up at Navi, eyes glittering with tears.
"Since hearing of your flight from Astavar, and then seeing the intelligence you sent through Red Crown from Orlean, my lady, I prayed every day that the Queen's light would guide you home to us."
Navi helped the woman rise, her own eyes bright.
"You are from Astavar?"
"I am, my lady. But Red Crown is my allegiance. I have not seen home since the Empire took Ventera.
Please, tell me if I can bring back with me any messages for your loved ones."
"I have no loved ones, my lady,"
the woman set her jaw.
"They all came with me to fight for Ventera. I am the only one left."
Navi closed her eyes.
"My sister, your courage leaves me without words."
"Well,"
the woman sniffed loudly and wiped her eyes.
"Lucky for you, my lady. I've enough words for us all."
"Hob?"
She slapped a hand onto his shoulder. Hob grimaced.
"I know you need my help for your Patrick and your wandering rebel babes. And my help you shall have.
But first, baths. You all smell like shit.
Who is this?
Eliana jerked her head at the woman. Will anyone introduce us, or will we all just stand here and let her ramble on?
I know who you are.
The woman stepped back from Hob and considered Eliana with narrowed eyes.
You're the Dread of Orlene. You ruined the raid. You almost got everyone at Crown's Hollow killed.
She looked Eliana up and down, then spat in her face.
My name's Camille. I've got enough paid swords in this place to fill a temple. So don't fuck with me, girl, or it'll be your end.
Then she stepped back, smiled brightly at everyone, and clapped her hands. Four of the robed figures glided forward.
We prepared bathing rooms for you. Please don't talk to me again until you smell better.
Oh, little one, Camille smiled at Remy.
You're a sweet fellow. To whom do you belong?
Remy lifted his chin and took Eliana's hand.
To my sister.
Camille's face hardened.
Well, that's a shame, isn't it?
He glared back at her.
Not to me.
Even to Eliana, the smug smile she shot at Camille felt insufferable. But upon entering the bathing chamber, Eliana's mind caught up with itself, and her happiness died. Shit. It was a gorgeously appointed room. Walls of white polished stone, dressing screens covered with brocaded fabric in plum and turquoise. Cushioned settees piled high with bath linens, baskets of soap, bottles of oils, and lotions. In the center of the space bubbled an enormous circular pool. A fountain stood at its center, featuring a slender statue of Saint Tamarin combing shadows from her hair. They were to bathe here. Eliana wanted desperately to bathe. But first Na'vi would want to change her bandages. She would see Eliana's smooth, unblemished back. Simon and Hob had taken another chamber, thank God. But Na'vi was bad enough. Eliana released Remy's hand and began backing away from the pool. El, he glanced at her, yawning, then froze.
Oh.
Na'vi gazed happily at the pool and let out a contented sigh.
God, it'll feel good to remember what it's like to be a proper human again. Eliana, let's change your bandages.
Here you are, my lady,
murmured one of the bustling attendants. She handed Na'vi a basket of clean white cloths.
The wolf told us you would need these. We are trained as healers, my lady. Shall we help you?
Oh, that would be lovely. Eliana.
Na'vi frowned when she saw Eliana inching toward the door.
What are you doing?
I don't want to change my bandages.
Eliana's panic was so complete that she could think of nothing else to say.
They're fine.
Na'vi's smile was bewildered.
They'll get infected if we don't. It's been hours. Come here.
One of the attendants moved toward Eliana, bowed, then reached out to guide her down the steps toward the pool. Eliana slapped her away.
Get away from me!
Na'vi stared at her.
What in God's name is wrong with you? Don't come any closer. Tell me what's wrong. Maybe I can help.
Eliana let out a burst of incredulous laughter.
I need help from no one. You're delirious. Your fever has returned. Just leave her alone!
Remy cried out. Before Eliana could move, still frozen with fear, Na'vi had lunged, spun her around and pinned her, front first, against one of the room's smooth marble columns. A familiar blade pressed into Eliana's side.
Arabeth, she thought faintly. You traitor.
She wanted to twist away, but remembered her supposed wounds.
You're hurting me, she gasped out. Please, my burns. This knife of yours is my favorite.
Na'vi said tightly.
I couldn't resist swiping it when I had the chance. I'll give it back, perhaps, if you don't make me angry.
You're hiding something from me. Tell me.